Hello, and welcome to the Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month. This monthly cassette tape series represents yet another step in accomplishing Grandy & Associates' vision of helping the service contractor come to a place of maturity and profitability. Each month, a different national speaker from throughout the service and trades industry shares dozens of cost-reducing, profit-increasing ideas to help you become a more profitable company. This month's tape is presented by Tom Grandy, the founder of this tape series. Tom is president of Grandy & Associates and has been doing business training specifically for the trades industry for over 15 years. Grandy & Associates presents 9 full-day business seminars, offers one-on-one consulting, and is the creator of the industry's leading software program to model companies in the area of labor pricing and cash flow projections. Tom's newest program combines his 15 years of business training into 3 intense days of business training and is called the Basic Business Boot Camp. The boot camp is for contractors who are serious about profitable growth and is held each month at Grandy & Associates offices in Owensboro, Kentucky. Unlike most of our tapes, this is a live presentation given at the 2002 Comfort Tech Conference in Baltimore, Maryland. The topic is Learning Effective Management Skills. The presentation will be in 2 parts. This tape will cover the 7 attributes of an effective manager, plus 4 ways to increase communications. Next month's tape will be part 2 and will cover 3 specific goals effective managers need to meet, 3 great ways to motivate people, 6 ways to measure our success, and lastly, we'll look at 3 numbers every manager needs to fully understand. I think you'll find both tapes entertaining as well as filled with lots of practical ideas of how to become a more effective manager.
What I want to do today is I want to go through several things about being an effective manager. These aren't textbook things. These are things that I have found helpful for me over the years, for people that I've talked to over the years. And my hope is that when you leave here today, you'll pick up 2 or 3 or maybe 4 or 5 ideas that you can go back and just do something different in your company and become a better manager than what you were before. So what we're going to talk about today, over the hour and a half that we have, we're going to talk about the 7 attributes of an effective manager. We're going to start with that. Then we're going to talk about 4 ways to increase communications. We're through with that. We're going to look at 3 specific goals we need to meet. Obviously, we don't have any goals. We can't meet them. So we're going to set up some specific goals as a manager for you. Then we're going to look at 3 great ways to motivate people. We're all looking for good ways to motivate those that work for us inside the company. Then we're going to talk about 6 ways to measure our success. It doesn't do us much good to work hard and do great work if we don't have any way to measure ourselves, know whether we hit our goals or not. So we're going to talk about ways to measure that. Then the last thing we're going to talk about is 3 numbers that you as a manager need to understand. Because even if you do everything from the top down to right here perfectly, bottom line, ability to manage in your company boils down to, hey, did your department, the area you're responsible for, did it make money or not? So we're going to talk about 3 numbers that you need to be tracking, you need to understand, so you know whether you're profitable in your department or not. So that's kind of what we're going to cover this afternoon. I think you'll find it interesting. The first thing we're going to talk about is the 7 attributes of an effective manager. Attitude. You know why most people do not continue to do work with a company? And that's not just you. That's Walmart, Kmart, gasoline, the mall, any place in town. You know why most people stop doing work with a company, stop purchasing from them? It goes back to attitude. Dale Carnegie did a study many, many years ago. It was repeated by South Central Bell a few years after that. And they said, you know, why do people stop doing business with a company? And the results came out about the same. Some like 2 or 3% of the people died, and that's a real good reason not to continue. I accept that one. About 15 to 20% of the people change locations, just physically move from one place to another. That's another valid reason not to continue with you. But clearly, nearly 70% of the people did not continue to do work with the company, not because of the product, not because of the service, but because of the attitude of one or more of the people they talked to. And that could be your answering service. That could be the boss. That could be the technician. You know, somebody had a rotten day, a bad attitude, and all of a sudden, turn the customer on. When I first heard that, I said, man, that's a pretty high figure. I don't know if I believe that or not. When I'm back in town, I travel quite a bit. When I'm back in town, one of the things my wife likes to do is we like to get up early in the morning, and she likes Hardy's coffee. So we'll go drive through Hardy's, we'll pick up 2 cups of coffee, we'll go back to the house, and we'll have some sharing time. And it just so happened, after I heard those statistics, we had moved from one house in town to a different one when we had to go to a different Hardy's. first morning through the New Hardings. Drove through the drive-thru, picked up two cups of coffee, handed my wife, got ready to pull back out on the highway, and you know what she said? She said, I don't like their coffee. And I looked over there, and literally, she hadn't tasted it yet. But when we went through that drive-thru window, that person at the drive-thru had a rotten morning. I mean, their attitude was pathetic. And guess what? It instantly transferred to the coffee. I said, that's what they're talking about. That's what they're talking about. Your attitude towards your customer can literally make or break your company. And your attitude towards your employees as a manager can make or break your department. First thing in terms of attitude of a manager, attributes of a manager, is have a good attitude. Have it as much as you can. Get somebody within the office to be kind of a sounding board for you. And if you start going the wrong direction, just give them the authority to tap you on the shoulder and say, hey, you may want to go get a cup of coffee or something. Okay? It's good to have somebody to be accountable to like that. Second attribute of an effective manager is this. Don't assume previous policies and procedures are correct. Now, a lot of times we move into a position, especially when it's been occupied by somebody else, and we assume the policies and the procedures and everything that's set up is correct. I mean, it was there before we got there. It must be right. Don't assume that. Question. Ask about every policy, every procedure. Question why it's there and why it's necessary. And the reason is, things get passed on that don't necessarily need to be passed on. Most of you have probably heard the story about the housewife that every time she fixed a roast, she cut the end of the roast off before she put it in a pan. And she was a newlywed, and after seeing that four or five times, her new husband said, why do you cut the roast off before you put it in the pan? She said, well, my mother always cut it off before she put it in the pan. So 3 or 4 months later, her mother came in, spent a couple days with him. So he asked her, he said, you know, you're my new wife always cuts the roast off, the end of the roast, before she cooks it, puts it in the pan. But she said, she does that because you always did that. I said, why do you do that? She said, well, I really don't know. My mother always did it. Her grandmother always did it. Before she cut off or cooked a roast, she cut the end off and she put it in the pot. That's kind of strange. A few months later, the grandmother came to visit. Sits down with the grandmother. Said, I don't understand. Said, my wife cuts off the end of the roast before she cooks it. Her mom cuts it off. And she said, you always did too. Why do you cut the end of the roast off? She looked at her with kind of a quizzical look in her eye and said, well, we were pretty poor when I was young. We only had one size pot, and the roast never fit. So we cut the end of it off. Okay? So it fit in the pot. But it had been handed on for 3 generations. Because nobody questioned the procedures. Nobody questioned the policy. As a new manager, that's one of the first things you got to do. Question the policies and the procedures that you're responsible for. Third thing, be willing to change. That's a tough one for all of us. Okay? Don't get stuck on the way you've always done things. You know, stick to your principles. Those things are important, but be willing to change. When I first got out of school back in 1970 out of Virginia Tech, I went to work for Liggett Myers Tobacco Company. Made cigarettes, never smoked in my life, and I went to work for a cigarette company. And that was back in the time when computerization was just coming into corporate America. And we had a rather good-sized accounting department in our corporate office there. And one day management came in, and they announced to the accounting office, and especially the guy who was head of accounting, he said, we're going to computerize the accounting function. Well, a guy who was head of accounting back there had been with the company for 25 years. Faithful, did exactly what he was supposed to do. Excellent person, but he hated computers. He hated even the idea of computers. And he put his foot down the first day and said, I'm not computerizing this department. And they said, yeah, you are. And he said, no, we're not. Well, over the next year, they gradually moved in. They changed procedures over. They got everything lined up. They got the new design in. And about a year later, they were computerized. They flipped the switch, and guess what? Now the whole department was totally computerized, and the manager who'd been there for 25 years didn't have the faintest idea what was going on. And you know what happened? Within 2 months, he was out looking for another job. Faithful, quality individual, been with him 25 years, had lots of integrity, but he wasn't willing to change. Okay? As we come in there as new managers, we've got to be willing to change our old thinking, move into the new thinking, get some new ideas, be willing to do things differently, be willing to change. The fourth thing is be willing to grow. Fourth attribute of an effective manager, be willing to grow. You know what the number one fear factor in America is? Number one thing people are scared to death of? Standing right up here. public speaking. Guess what? I'm scared too. I've been doing this 15 years. I still get nervous when I stand up here. But you know what it does? It forces me into the Lord. Got to pray a lot ahead of time, get strength that I don't have. Every one of you, I'm assuming you're a manager, you're about to be, or you probably wouldn't be in this session. You're going to do some public speaking. Now, that public speaking may be in front of one technician, maybe in front of five technicians. You may be head of an office somewhere. Okay? Eventually, you're going to wind up speaking to a trade association, or maybe the Better Business Bureau, maybe the Chamber of Commerce. Sooner or later, you're going to be in that position. I want to strongly urge you, if you haven't done it already, take a Dale Carnegie course or something like that. You can read 100 books, listen to 27 tapes on how to public speak, and guess what? They aren't a lick of good until you stand up and start doing it. It's the only way to overcome it. When you go into a Dale Carnegie class, guess what you do the first 20 minutes you're there? Boing! You stand up and you start talking, okay? It's the only way to overcome it. Fear? Concern? Worry? Yeah, we're all in that condition. But do it. It's the only way to overcome it, and you'll be valuable the rest of your life because of it. The other thing, when we're talking about being willing to grow, not just in public speaking, look at new ways of doing things. Give some serious thought to joining the mixed group. Is anybody in here in a mixed group or peer group or something like that right now? I imagine several of you are. If I took a poll of you, I bet every one of you said it's the best thing I've ever done in my entire life. It's what everybody tells me. Okay? And a peer group is nothing more than getting four, five, six contractors who do similar type work in non-competing territories. And you sit down and you work with each other. You meet three or four times a year. You share ideas. Usually sometimes they'll pick a topic on maybe sales, employee relations, or collections, and then you'll just share ideas there. In fact, if you want to get really, really creative, create a mixed group outside of your industry. If you do HVAC work, which I assume everybody in here does, create a mixed group of other trades. You know, get a landscaper in there. I don't have anything to do with landscaping. Get a carpet cleaner in there. Get a plumber in there. Get an electrician in there. But I don't have anything in common with them. Yeah, you do. You know what that thing you have in common is? You're working with the same customer base. Okay? You start networking locally with a group of people in other trades, you know what happens? It forces you to look at things differently. We do a monthly boot camp in our facility in Owensboro, Kentucky. And lots of times we'll have maybe a carpet cleaner there, HVAC, plumbing. And they start talking to one another. They find out ideas and ways of doing things that they thought were totally contrary, wouldn't even work. And they found out, hey, there's a new way of doing things. Okay? Be willing to grow. Be willing to change. Challenge you. Get involved in something like that. Be willing to grow. And in terms of our attributes, after we've got our attitude lined up properly, we don't assume what's going on in terms of our present policies and procedures. We're willing to change. We're willing to grow. Next thing we want to talk about is being flexible. Being flexible. My mom died about 1991, and I was living in Owensboro, Kentucky, and she was in Roanoke, Virginia. So for a period of about 6 or 8 months, every other weekend, I would fly down to Roanoke, and I'd spend the weekend with her, and I'd fly back. And she would have one of her friends pick me up at the airport. Different people most of the time, but not all the time. And I noticed over a period of months, there was this one lady. She's about 70, probably in the mid-70s, maybe late 70s. I mean, she was full of energy. She was happy. She had an attitude about life that I've never seen from most people. And I noticed her, and finally it came her turn to pick me up at the airport. About halfway from the airport to back where my mom was, I asked her a question. I said, I might notice Miss So-and-so, and I can't remember her name today, but I can remember her words to the T. So I've noticed ever since I met you several months ago, every time I see you have a great attitude, you're looking forward to life, you love people, you seem to be at peace. And I said, now I'm a guy that's relatively young, I've got a young family. So what after, and this is a great question to ask older people, what could you share with me in all the years of life you've had, what could you share with me in a nutshell that would help me as a younger person get better over the years? I mean, she didn't hesitate a second, not a second. You know what she said? She said, when the wind blows, bend. When the wind blows, bend. Because then she said, if you don't bend, you know what'll happen? You'll break. So when the wind blows, bend. Because if you don't, you'll break. It's the same thing with us as managers. If we're not flexible in what we're doing, This is the way I've done it. This is the way we're going to do it. We're not going to do it that way anymore. You just destroyed your department and yourself in the middle of that. You've got to be flexible. Be willing to look at things from new directions. Be willing to identify with that employee or that customer who doesn't think like you do, doesn't see things like you do. Guess what? There are people like that out there. You ever run into any of them? Yeah, probably so. There's a lot of them out there. There's a lady, some of you probably heard her speak. Her name is Sharon Roberts. She does a full-day program, but she also did a tape for us many years ago on selling to women. One of the best tapes I think I've ever heard in my life. And she talked on that tape about something that I had never understood before that time. She talked about males and females. And she said men tend to gather information, as you hear it in a conversation or in a group. They'll gather information, they'll sit there quietly, and they'll take it all into their head. And when everything's been said, we will give a solution. Okay? Because that's what guys do. We overcome, we take care of things, we challenge, we take care of those projects, and we do that kind of thing. We sit there and we gather all the data, and when it's through, we give a decision what needs to be done. The next statement's the one that changed my life and my relationship with my wife. She said, women, on the contrary, and you women can say yay or nay in the middle of this, she said, women, on the contrary, tend to think out loud. Think out loud. In other words, they verbalize what they're thinking. We think it quietly, they think it out loud. Now, what's the problem with that from a male perspective if you're out there doing a sales call? What's the problem with that when you go home and your wife starts talking on something that seems to go on and on and on, rambling, not getting anywhere? What do we do as macho guys most of the time? Yeah, we interrupt them. Usually we get interrupted with a little bit of emotion, like, would you just get around to the point? Tell me what's going on. And what do we do at that point? What did I do at that point? I cut off communication just that quick. Didn't just cut off communication. I usually caused some emotional problems in the middle of that process. You do it in a sales call, guess what? You just lost the sale. I started practicing what she talked about. It wasn't easy. Still not easy. Okay? Zip my mouth and listen until my wife or another person I'm talking to, another female I'm talking to, finishes what they're saying. And you know what I found out over the years? Those things that started out in the conversation as a major problem, and she would talk about it and talk about it and talk about it and talk about it, and by the time she was finished, guess what? Most of the time, there wasn't a problem there at all. She just wanted to verbalize it. She wanted somebody to share with her. And she has that right to do that. And I should have listened a long time ago. It got me in a lot of trouble. Okay? Still does occasionally. I'm not there yet, believe me. Okay? But you've got to be flexible. Look at new things are different. Customers are different. Employees are different. Okay? And we all like to surround ourselves with people who think and act like we do, but the reality is it's not going to happen. So we've got to be flexible. The sixth attribute of an effective manager is take time to think. In this world we live in, that doesn't happen. I mean, we are busy from the moment our feet hit the floor until we go to bed at night. Half of us wake up 3 or 4 times during the night thinking of things we should do, ought to do, or haven't done that past day. Take time to think. Now, most of us, I would guess, venture to guess, if I ask in this room, do you have a specific time, situation, place during the day where you think best? Most of us would have a time like that. And it probably wouldn't be what you'd expect. It's not sitting behind the desk. You know what my time to think is? In the shower. I have every brilliant thought I've ever had in my entire life, I think, came in the middle of a shower. Okay? Now, some of you wake up in the middle of the night, have a great thought. Some of you drive down the road. That's your way of relaxing. You have a thought at that point. Take time to think. Okay? Things are too busy in our world today. Now, the point of that thing is this. Anytime you get ready to put together an extremely important proposal, a letter with a specific direction in it, anything that's going to have a large bearing on something you do as a company, and that could be a letter to an employee, that could be a proposal to a customer, that might be something the local trade association you're recommending do, I want to ask you to do this. This is a good practical point. Write it out as best you can. And then when you're through with that thing, set it aside for an entire day. Then reread it before you turn it in. I cannot tell you the number of times over my years that I have rushed through trying to put something together. I thought it was absolutely perfect. I got it in the mail, sent it that day. Sometimes 2 minutes later, sometimes 2 hours later, sometimes the next morning, I think, my goodness, I forgot to put this in. I forgot to put that in. Gee, I wish I hadn't said this particular way. I know that's going to offend somebody. Why didn't I wait? I can tell you without reservation, almost every time I wait until the next day, reread whatever it is I'm going to send out. I'm talking about significant things. Almost without exception, I'll wind up changing several things in there. Things I forgot, things I wanted to add, some things I should take out that I thought differently about the day before. As an effective manager, that's part of your responsibility to communicate properly. Okay? So give yourself some time to think. And when you put things in writing, take some time before you send it out, if at all possible. The seventh thing, that is, learn to teach before you delegate. We're talking about attributes of effective managers now. Learn to teach before you delegate. You know what one of the biggest problems is as new managers, as we move into those positions? I'm going to do it myself. It's a whole lot quicker. I got this person I'm supposed to be training how to do this particular thing. Man, they're slow. I got things to do. So I'd rather do it myself. And guess what? It does. It takes me a whole lot less time. What's that do to me? Pretty soon I'm totally overloaded with detail. Totally overloaded with detail. And what else does it do, which is even more serious? It demoralizes your employees, those that work for you. They'll never be able to make a decision because you won't let them make a decision. I won't let them make a decision. You've all heard the thing, and it's correct. Give a man a fish, and he'll eat for a day. Teach a man to fish, and he'll eat for the rest of his life. Okay? It's very difficult, especially as a new manager, to train people under you to do things. And part of the problem in that process is this. That person you're training to do what you used to do will never do it as good as you do it. They will never come up to the efficiency that you would like to have. That's just nature. Okay? But you know what you find out in the middle of that process? They can do things sometimes differently, more creatively. Sometimes it's more effective. Sometimes more acceptable to the customer. And often, especially when working with technicians, you know, they may not come up to where we'd like them to be, but our level's right here, and the customer's high level of satisfaction is significantly below that. But if we simply turn around and we do it, whatever the process is, rather than taking the time to train them, they'll never learn how to do it. But if you'll spend that extra hour, 2 hours, sometimes maybe an entire day teaching them a system, showing them how to do it properly, we do it the next day and the next day. But guess what? After a few days, a week, now you don't have to worry about it anymore. You can delegate that to somebody else. Okay? I'm going to do a fun thing here. You might want to take one of those pieces of paper in front of you. You can use your hand if you want to. We're going to take a little 10-question test. We're going to find out if you have a problem with delegation. Okay? I'm not going to ask for a show of hands when you're through. This will be kind of fun. I want you to answer yes or no to each one of these questions. You can, again, put it on your hands, write it on a piece of paper, how many yeses, how many noes you got. First one is, are unexpected emergencies constantly occurring in your department? Yes or no? Are unexpected emergencies constantly occurring in your department? Yes or no? Second question, do you find you're so pressed for time to get daily work done that you have no time to plan? When you come in the morning, you leave at night, you don't have time in the middle of that process to ever sit down and say, where are we going, how are we going to get there? You're too busy. Too many details, too much going on. Yes or no? Does that describe you? Number three, is there a great deal of friction or dissatisfaction amongst those that work for you? Is there a lot of friction or dissatisfaction about those people who work for you? Try to be as honest as you can. Nobody's going to look at these numbers. Okay? Number four, always bogged down in detail. Yes or no? You're always bogged down in detail. Yes or no? Number five, do simple jobs take a long time to get done? Something that should only take an hour with everything else going on takes you 2-3 hours, half the day? The simple jobs take longer than they should to get done. Number six, does work slow down or halt when you're gone? That's a real one right there. Does things just kind of grind to a halt when you're not there supervising, telling people what to do, how to do it, where to go, what to do? Yes or no?
Number seven, do you complain or criticize others when the work of your group does not go as you have planned? Blame somebody else when things didn't work out properly? That's what I'm saying. Number seven, yes or no? Number eight, do those who work for you always wait for you to give the sign before they start anything? Do those who work for you always wait for you to say, okay, go ahead, let's go. Start the trucks, go to the trucks, start the job, whatever it is. Do they wait for you to say go? Or do they go on their own? Yes or no? Number nine, your employees stopped coming to you to get your reaction to their idea. That's a real red flag. Your employees, have they stopped coming to you to get a reaction to their ideas? And lastly, are your employees poker face, that is displaying very little humor, very little spontaneity in their work, just kind of robots that go about and do what they're supposed to do each day? They may do it well, but is there a lack of enthusiasm, very little humor, very little spontaneity? Now, real quickly, look at your little list there and see how many yeses and how many noes you got. It's not too tough on the math. We only got a total of 10, so you should be all right. By the way, don't trust anything. I always thought if you bought those calculators at the store, they all had the right answers on them. You know what? Remember a seminar 6 months ago, a distributor went out and bought calculators for everybody in the room. Two guys in the front row were pushing the same numbers and got different answers.
That's scary.
But you only got 10. You can figure that out. Okay. How many yeses, how many noes you got? Look at it. If you have 4 or more yeses out of those 10, 4 or more yeses, there's probably a need to delegate more. You might feel like this every day. If you got 4 or more yeses out of those 10, there's probably a need to delegate more. And you can probably go back and pinpoint the areas you need to change even now without going into the other areas. So those are the 7 attributes of effective managers. Their attitude, they don't assume policies and procedures are correct. They're willing to change. They're willing to grow. They're willing to be flexible. They take time to think. And they learn to teach before they delegate. Okay, let's move into a new area. Let's talk about communication. First thing I want to talk about from a communication standpoint is if you're a manager, have weekly meetings. Every single week at a stated time, and have a stated time, not only a day of the week, but a time to start, and more importantly, a time to finish. Okay? Have a predetermined time to stop. If I decided when I came to each one of these sessions that I was going to start maybe right on the hour, maybe 5 minutes after the hour, maybe 20 minutes after the hour, and every speaker did that, what would be going through your mind when it came time to 10 o'clock and you're supposed to be in a session? I can be there at 10:15. It probably won't start yet. Guess what? Your employees are in the same situation. If you're going to have a meeting started on time, whether they're there or not, whether only one of the 4 people is there, started on time. Because it won't take long before they realize, hey, it's going to start at this point, and it's going to stop at this point. During that meeting, discuss what went right and what went wrong the last week. Not just the good stuff, discuss the problems. I came in a day early to Comfort Tech. I stayed with my sister, who lives in Columbia, Maryland. And her son and his wife came over for dinner the night before. And they're both in their mid-20s, and they both teach a Bible study at church. And their Bible study classes have grown to the point that they're now dividing them into 2 or 3 groups. And they're taking members out of the class who are leading the sessions themselves. And I remember his wife saying the other night, said, we're going to do the ping pong ball thing tonight. I said, ping pong ball thing, what would that be? She said, we do, before class begins, we've got a brand new person who's going to lead the session tonight. So we take in 6 ping pong balls. 4 of them are yellow, 2 of them are red. We just randomly distribute those 6 ping pong balls to people in the class. And then before the class begins, we tell the people who have the 4 yellow ping pong balls, at the end of the session, we want you to give 1 positive comment about the teaching that was given that night. Not the content, but how they did it, their presentation, something positive. And you 2 people with the red ball, guess what you get to do? Your assignment is to criticize. Not criticize to hurt, but give positive feedback. Now, what could change to make yourselves more effective? Okay. That's a neat idea. I like that. Because people in the session automatically know when they're through, they're going to get twice as much positive feedback, but they're also going to get some constructive criticism in the middle of it. You got a large group of people, try that sometime. And set some specific goals for the coming week. There's absolutely no good to have a meeting if you don't set some goals. Now, what do you expect to do? What are you supposed to do by this time next week? Maybe an area of paperwork, sales, attitude, organization. Something's supposed to be changed by this time next week. And then from an accountability standpoint, the very first thing you do when that meeting starts the next week, you've written down what was supposed to be done and by who, and you go, hey, Joe, how are you doing on this particular item? Have some accountability to it. Because you know what happens when you do that? They're thinking all week, hey, I'm going to have to answer that question next Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday. Okay? And it makes things happen. So from a communication standpoint, have weekly meetings with your employees. You may have one, you may have six, but have a weekly meeting with them. That's to get specific things done. Then I want to also suggest as a second communication tool, have a monthly breakfast meeting with your employees. Have it prior to business hours. This meeting is primarily, although not totally, primarily to build relationships. Now, if we're an intense 30-40 minute meeting like we talked about a moment ago each week, it's not time to relax and talk and share with one another. So at least once a month, have a breakfast meeting prior to working hours. Use it primarily to build relationships with your employees, but also use that same meeting to do things like give out awards or bonuses. You know, review the high points. Maybe they got a bunch of positive comments back on their positive response cards that week. You use that as a time to give out those things that were positive reinforcements to your employees. And on a quarterly basis, if possible, share the profit loss for your department. Keep them informed of what's going on from a financial standpoint. You know, because of what we're doing as a group, are we making money? Are we losing money? What's happening? If you got a budget, review some of that with them. Get them involved in what's happening. So you want the weekly meeting to get specific things done. You want the monthly meeting to just kind of build relationships and use that as a positive time to build relationships amongst your group. Third area of communication, simply put it in writing. Physically write out instructions on things that could be misunderstood. Physically write out things that could be misunderstood. I'm totally amazed. I will share things sometimes with my office manager. I'll tell her exactly what I want done, and she'll do exactly what I said from her perspective. And guess what? That office isn't suspected. I didn't communicate what I was thinking. Well, she didn't hear what I was trying to say. I want to urge you, anytime you've got really specific, important information to convey to your employees, put it in writing. That could be directions to the customer's home or business. If you got that on the computer, print that out before they go. Some of you have a complete customer base. Every time you've been to the customer's home, you've got information on that. Print it out to the technician before they go out there if you're in charge of technicians. Okay? Need to know information. Things like, this is a callback call. Customer can't hear very well. That's important information when they're going out to the job. They're angry about the last call. It'd be good to tell the person who's going to talk to them before that. Or they might have a large man-eating dog. Okay? Well, I don't know about you, but if I'm going to somebody's house and they got a large man-eating dog, I'd really like somebody to tell me about that. Okay? It's important to me. Now, start a little process. When there's really important information like that that needs to be conveyed, okay, use colored paper. You can use a little postcard, bright yellow, bright green, bright orange, or get those post-it notes about that size, same thing, bright colors, so that over a period of time, your employees that work with you, and that could be somebody in the office or that could be somebody in the field, depends on where you work, when they see that bright green note sticking on their desk or on their time card or on their file cabinet, they instantly know, hey, important information, I need to read this. Okay? Put it on a colored sticky note or something. Do it consistently. Okay? So when you get special concerns or requests from the customer, they get conveyed properly. Put it in writing. This is one of my favorites right here from a communication standpoint. Use stories to convey an important point. Use stories to convey an important point. But before you do that, if you'll do one other thing, you'll be amazed at how much communication improves. And that one thing is this. You want to talk to, what's your name?
Joe.
If I just started talking about the next subject and I wanted to say it to Joe, Joe may listen, he may not. Okay? Well, if I say, Joe, Joe's going to pay attention, then I'm going to say what I need to say. My wife's name is Dora. If I say Dora and then wait 1 or 2 seconds and then start talking, I've got her attention. Now, I don't do that very often. I should. So what happens is I start talking, and 3 sentences into it, she said, are you talking to me? And she's missed the first 3 things I've said because I didn't get her attention. So first step is, say the person's name. Everybody likes to hear their name. They become attentive when they hear their own name. Okay? Then use stories to convey information. I'm going to give you 3 examples here for a very specific reason, which you'll understand when I'm through. I shared with you earlier my first job as an industrial engineer out of college. I went to work for Liggett Myers Tobacco Company. They hired myself and one other guy to start an industrial engineering department for their corporation before. Oops, never back. Never had one before. So I went down there and I'd been working probably less than 2 weeks. And my boss came to the office. His name was Mr. Mulholland. I'll never forget Mr. Mulholland. Probably one of the finest individuals I've ever met in my life. And he was one of those guys who could convey information without having to say it. You ever meet people like that? You just knew what they meant without them having to come right out and say, you do this. I'll never forget the day he walked into my office after I'd been there for 2 weeks. He walked into my office, and I was sitting over there, and there was another desk over here, and he kind of sat on the edge of the desk like this. Whoops. No, he didn't. He didn't get his microphone caught. He sat on the desk like this. And he said, Tom, he said, I've been doing a lot of reading. And I've been doing a lot of asking questions in terms of other people in this industry. And what I've been asking is, how long does it take to get some effective use out of a new industrial engineer like you? And I was kind of on the edge at that point. And he said, you know what people told me throughout industry? Hey, so when you hire a brand new industrial engineer out of college, it normally takes 2 to 3 years before you really see any effective work out of them. Then you know what he did? He got off the edge of the desk. He walked over to where I was. He put his arm around my shoulder, looked at me with that grin that only he could have, and you know what he said? He said, you got 6 months. Now, he didn't have to tell me what he was saying, okay? He wasn't saying 6 months from today, I better be effective. What he was conveying was, hey, use your time, use your energies, you be as effective as you can starting today because I'm watching you. But he conveyed it with a story. He conveyed it with his actions. Okay? Most of you know the story of King David in the Bible, the story of David and Bathsheba. King David had just become the king of Judah and Israel, most powerful man in the land. It was a time of the year when they went out to war. David was back in the kingdom. David woke up late at night, walked out on his porch, looked across the way, and there was this beautiful woman named Bathsheba taking a bath. And because he was king, he could do pretty much whatever he wanted, and he sent his people over there and said, bring Bathsheba to my room. Bathsheba was married. Bathsheba came to his room. They had relations that night. She went home. Short time later, she sent a message back to King David, said, I'm pregnant. David panicked. He tried to cover up what was going on. Her husband was a guy named Uriah the Hittite. If you read the right places in the Bible, he was one of what was considered David's mighty men. I mean, he was one of his best warriors. It was his wife that he'd done this to. And he called Uriah back in from the front lines. And he brought Uriah into the room and he said, Uriah, you've done a great job out there. I appreciate what you've done. You know, take a day off, relax, go home, spend some time with your wife. And he was hoping he would go home and he'd spend the night with her and he'd find out that she was pregnant by him and not him. Okay? But Uriah didn't do that. You know what Uriah did? He stayed at the king's gate that night. He didn't go home. And David heard about it. Went down and talked to Uriah, said, you know, I told you could go home last night. He said, I can't do that, King. He said, my other comrades are out there fighting for you right now. It wouldn't be right for me to go home and relax in my own home with my own wife. So David tried again. This time he got him drunk that night, thinking he would just wander on home and spend some time with his wife. Uriah didn't do that either. Uriah had a lot more integrity than David did. So then what King David did is he wrote a letter to his commander out in the field, and he sent it back by way of Uriah. And you know what the letter said? The letter said, in the midst of the heat of a battle, when you get up close to the town, he said, pull all the forces back but leave Uriah up front, hoping he would get killed. And he said, when that happens, he said in the note, when that happens, you let me know. And that's exactly what happened. The forces pulled back, Uriah the Hittite was killed. And David thought he had things covered up at that point in time. And then a prophet came to see him. God sent him a prophet named Nathan. And this is the really neat part that I want you to get the point of. Nathan came at the word of God to go confront King David. But he didn't tell, God didn't say, Nathan, you get in front of this guy, you get in front of the king of Israel, and you tell him, hey, he's had relations with a woman, he's killed a man. He didn't hit him straight on. You know what he did? He told him a story. And this is the story he told King David. First words out of his mouth when he got before him, he said, King, there were two men in the city. He said, one was very rich. He had lots of herds, lots of flocks, lots of cattle, lots of sheep. Very rich man. He said, in that same city, there was another guy over here who only had one small ewe lamb. And he said it was his pride and joy. He said they raised it from birth. It was almost like a member of the family. Matter of fact, the Word of God says they treated it like a daughter. It's very precious to him. He only had one. He was a poor man. And he said one day the rich man had a friend come to visit him. And when his friend came to visit him, the rich man wouldn't take one of his own flock to feed him that night. He took the ewe lamb from the guy who had only one. And he slaughtered it and gave it to him for dinner. When David heard that, you know what happened? He got angry. He got angry. You know what he said? He said, that man is wrong. He said, that man who stole the ewe lamb needs to die. And he said, he should be paid back fourfold for what he did. And then you know what Nathan said? He looked right at him and said, King, you are the man. You are the man. He said, God told me to tell you, he's made you emperor. You had the past wives, you had the past kingdom, you had everything you wanted. If that had not been enough, I would have given you more. But you went over and you stole what another man had. The beauty of King David is he turned. That's why he's called a man of his own heart. But he had to put up with the consequences. Because that son that was born to Bathsheba that night, God required that he die, and he did die. But David repented. You know what the next son of Bathsheba was? King Solomon, wisest man that ever lived. Wisest man that ever lived. I got two trees in my backyard. They're kind of special to me for very specific reasons. My oldest daughter is married. She has two children, two little boys. One's about two and the other's about a little less than 1 year old. I've been watching these trees because I planted both of them and they're about a stick. There's two or three leaves on each one and they're about that high. And every year they'll grow a little bit. When they grow, you know what I do? I prune them. When it got a little bit bigger, I pruned it some more because I had a specific shape I wanted it to be in. And I've been pruning that one tree that's about 10 years old now, and I prune it severely every year. I'd cut off the low branches, and I'd cut off those that got a line, and I'd shape it up the way it needs to be. Each year it would get a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger. And right now, I can walk underneath that tree. But you know what? The only branches I can prune, it's now 7, 8 years old, the ones I can prune, the ones I can barely reach. I can't touch most of that tree. Okay. I got another little tree in the back of my yard. It's a lot younger than that. Same process, though. And I've been pruning it severely, too. And it's only about this high right now. I mean, I chop it down to nothing. Okay. Now, one of these days, the Lord's going to pick the perfect time. When my son-in-law comes to see me, I'm going to tell him the story about my trees. And after I do that, I'm going to tell him those trees are like his two children. You get about 4 or 5, maybe 6 years at most to form those kids. Their morals, trust of God. Because after they get 5, 6 years old, they're going to be like this tree over here. You can't prune it very much. I can do a little bit here, a little bit here. It's been formed. Okay? It's been formed. When you tell something in the form of a story, you'll remember it. You may not remember anything else I did today, but I guarantee you 2 weeks from now,
You're going to remember Mr. Mulholland. You're going to remember King David. And you're going to remember those two trees, okay? Because they tell the story that you got interested in, and then you remember the point at the end of it. If you've got something serious you need to share with one of the employees, think about how to convey it to them. How you do it is as important as what you say.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's tape. Feel free to give us a call with your comments, or if you prefer, you may fax or email our office. Better yet, check out Grandy and Associates on the World Wide Web. Our totally redesigned website now has a complete listing of all the products and services Grandy and Associates has to offer. Our address is www.grandyassociates.com, and it's also printed on the tape insert. Again, our website address is www.grandyassociates.com. One last comment. Grandy & Associates' newest program called the Basic Business Bootcamp is taking the industry by storm. Contractors from across the country are traveling to Owensboro, Kentucky to attend Tom Grandy's bootcamp. If you're not generating the profit you deserve, I would suggest you seriously consider attending the three-day bootcamp to learn all the basics of how to run a profitable business. To sign up for one of the monthly programs, simply give us a call at 1-800-432-7963. The Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month is produced and distributed by Grandy & Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line, 1-800-432-7963. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.